Good evening, everyone. For WRCO News, I'm Todd Coppernall. The Richland School District Board of Education has officially scheduled a special meeting for Monday, August 10th. The meeting will begin at 6:30 p.m. and will be held in the Richland School Board Conference Room in the Richland Center High School. The primary focus of the evening's agenda involves a motion to convene in closed session. This session is intended to conduct a pupil expulsion hearing and to allow for the necessary deliberations concerning the matter as permitted by state statutes. The board is expected to take formal action during this closed portion of the meeting. In addition to the expulsion hearing, the board will review and consider potential revisions to previous orders of pupil expulsion that have been issued. Furthermore, the members will evaluate a specific request for the expungement of an order of pupil expulsion. Once the board has addressed all items on the agenda or declined to take further action, the meeting will conclude with a motion to adjourn the meeting from the closed session. The Village of Spring Green Board of Trustees will convene for a meeting Wednesday, August 12th at 7 p.m. During this session, the board will address new business, specifically the discussion and potential action regarding proposed amendments to Ordinance 180 concerning bicycle and play vehicles. Additionally, the meeting will feature an information session regarding the 2027 budget timetable for the village. A benefit for Jolene Newkirk will be held Sunday, August 9th from 3 until 8 o'clock at the Buena Vista Bicentennial Park in Gotham. There will be a car cruise, a silent auction, and a bucket raffle along with other raffles. There will also be a barbecue chicken dinner at 5 o'clock. All proceeds will go to Jolene Newkirk. If you would like to donate, please contact Jessica Wanneke at 608-604-1396 or Lori Repsummer at 608-485-1272. The legal proceedings in the case of the state of Wisconsin versus Makoto Kuroda have brought to light a disturbing incident of workplace retaliation involving the use of hazardous chemicals at the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Influenza Research Institute. The defendant faces serious criminal charges, including second-degree recklessly endangering safety and tampering with household products, both felonies. These charges stem from an investigation that began in April 2026 after an employee at the research facility discovered that his drinking water and laboratory shoes had been contaminated with toxic substances. The incident first came to the attention of the UW-Madison Police Department April 6th when a researcher identified as TM reported a strange odor emanating from his water bottle. According to the criminal complaint, TM had consumed a portion of the water 2 days prior and immediately noticed a foul taste, which he fortunately spat out. The situation escalated when TM later discovered the same pungent chemical smell on his lab shoes. Forensic analysis conducted by the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene confirmed a high concentration of chloroform in the water bottle, a finding that indicated a significant and dangerous initial exposure level for any individual who might have consumed the liquid. As the investigation progressed, the focus shifted toward the defendant following a dramatic admission of guilt. Kuroda reportedly confessed to TM and his supervisors, stating plainly, "I did it." He further solidified this admission through an email sent to a professor at the institute expressing regret for his actions. During subsequent interviews with law enforcement, Kuroda detailed a history of professional friction and perceived disrespect from TM, citing issues ranging from lab safety protocols to interpersonal grievances. He admitted to using a syringe to inject a mixture of paraformaldehyde and triazole, chemicals he frequently handled for bacterial culture experiments, into TM's water bottle and shoes. Kuroda even revealed that he had used artificial intelligence to research the specific dosages of these chemicals that would cause physical illness without being lethal, intending for his colleague to, quote, feel bad rather than die. Currently, the legal case against Kuroda is actively moving through the Dane County Circuit Court system following his initial appearance where a $5,000 cash bond was set. The defendant was bound over for trial after a preliminary hearing established probable cause. Most recently, an arraignment was held August 6, during which Kuroda entered a plea of not guilty to the charges. The court has scheduled a pretrial conference for September 25th as the prosecution and defense prepare for the next phase of this complex and unsettling criminal matter. A Kenosha woman is facing legal proceedings after being charged with a felony in a recent vehicle-related incident. Emily A. Fair, 36, has been officially charged with taking and driving a Pleasant Prairie ambulance while she was completely naked, a Class H felony under Wisconsin statutes. The case, which was initiated through electronic filing August 4th, stems from an incident that led to her initial appearance in court earlier this week. During the initial court proceedings before Court Commissioner Daniel E. Kellum, a cash bond was set at $200. As part of the conditions for her release, Fair has been ordered to have no contact with the Pleasant Prairie Fire Department unless emergency services are required. The court also emphasized that proper attire is mandatory for all future appearances, specifically prohibiting shorts or tank tops within the courtroom. Defense attorney Daniel Slapsinski was appointed to represent Fair through the Public Defender's Office August 5th. During the early stages of the case, the defense raised concerns regarding the defendant's competency to stand trial. In response, the court has ordered a formal competency examination, and the necessary documentation has been forwarded to the Department of Health Services for review. A competency hearing has been scheduled to address these findings on August 26th at 3 p.m. before Judge David O. Hughes in Kenosha County Circuit Court. Fair remains in custody pending the results of the evaluation and the satisfaction of her bond conditions. In a significant escalation of congressional oversight regarding the federal response to the COVID-19 pandemic, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, chairman of the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, officially voted to hold Dr. Anthony Fauci in contempt of Congress. The move occurred during a business meeting of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, and was prompted by what Senator Johnson characterized as a refusal to comply with committee investigations and a notable silence from Dr. Fauci during recent testimony. During his remarks, Senator Johnson strongly rejected criticisms from Democratic colleagues who suggested the investigation was rushed or one-sided. He argued that the quest for accountability has been ongoing since 2020, citing a longstanding lack of cooperation from health officials. The senator pointed to past hearings involving alternative treatments and vaccine safety, alleging that previous attempts to bring forward diverse medical perspectives were systematically denigrated or ignored by the committee's ranking members. A central point of Johnson's argument involved revelations from Dr. Fauci's personal diaries, which the senator claims show a stark contradiction between Fauci's private thoughts and his public directives. Johnson highlighted an early entry suggesting the pandemic might be comparable to a severe flu season, questioning whether such a prognosis justified the widespread economic and social disruptions that followed. He emphasized that after 6 years, the American people still lack a full reckoning of the pandemic's origin and management. The senator concluded by asserting that Dr. Fauci's behavior during his most recent appearance displayed a fundamental contempt for the legislative branch and its constitutional role in conducting oversight. While Dr. Fauci has publicly stated he has nothing to hide, Johnson countered that his actions suggest otherwise. Looking ahead, the senator announced that his investigation is only beginning, with plans for transcribed interviews and further deep dives into the record to ensure comprehensive accountability for the decisions made during the COVID-19 era. A new policy proposal from the Department of Health and Human Services has sparked significant concern among early childhood advocates in Wisconsin, who warn that the rule could effectively dismantle the Head Start program. Published on August 7th, the federal regulation aims to simplify requirements and reduce administrative burdens, but local leaders like Jenny Maurer of the Wisconsin Head Start Association argue the changes would roll back essential standards for teacher qualifications, classroom staffing ratios, and family support services. Maurer contends that these rollbacks would undermine the quality of care and jeopardize the future of funding for a program that currently serves over 12,000 Wisconsin families. The potential impact is particularly acute in rural Wisconsin, where nearly 70% of children already reside in child care deserts. In many of these communities, Head Start remains the sole licensed provider of early childhood education. Maurer fears that the proposed rule represents a dangerous progression toward losing these vital services entirely in rural areas. Furthermore, the regulation introduces a rigid language requirement that would mandate all education be conducted in English. Advocates point out that this is highly impractical for regions like western Wisconsin, where many classrooms consist of Spanish-speaking three-year-olds who require native language support to effectively transition to English literacy. While federal officials maintain that the changes are necessary for cost reduction and accountability, critics of the program point to past reports highlighting high costs and inconsistent long-term results as justification for reform. Maurer acknowledges that while improvements can always be made, the current proposal threatens the very elements that make Head Start successful. As the program continues to grapple with funding delays and regional closures, the next 60 days will be a critical window for community members to participate in the public comment period and voice their perspectives on the future of the program. Vital statistics right after this.